sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Black Friday, everybody. Great to have you with us. Today's show, and you need to stock up for the rest of the weekend. We are only just part of the way through the weekend. So you need to stock up at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Did I mention beer? Best selection anywhere. And on top of it, water, soda, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The pickle bar is second to none. Love the barrel pickles, love the dill pickles, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the holiday weekend. We only went through Thanksgiving, and we still have today. In fact, you got Nebraska, Iowa coming up in a few minutes. You still have today, all day tomorrow, Sunday, and a lot of people have Monday off. Wow. Stock up for the weekend at Brewers Outlet. And by the way, start stocking up for the holidays as well. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, what do we have coming up today? First of all, you got Penn State Bucknell basketball coming up tomorrow in the Bryce Jordan Center. Doug Birdsong is going to join us on the show today to preview the game tomorrow. Of course, you'll hear it on Eagle 107. We'll have Doug on the show in just a few minutes. Then we will shift gears and get to Penn State football. Because we'll have Rich Scarcella, the Reading Eagle, on today. Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and the Patriot News is going to join us today. And Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, on another big weekend for the Pittsburgh Steelers coming up. So action-packed as only we can do it. All right, maybe it doesn't sound action-packed. I mean, let's face it, this is not a McQueen movie going up and down the hills of San Francisco in a Mustang. But still, it's our version of radio action-packed, and we've got that and much more coming up in the show today. I hope you enjoyed Thanksgiving yesterday. I know Kevin is getting ready to go out into the woods, and we do this as a public service announcement to all hunters out there. Be aware, Kevin's out there, although he claims he has only fired the gun once ever, and it was a miss. Now, there are a lot of people out there that are very happy to say that, Kevin, it was a miss. Very happy to hear you say that. Not, you know, just out of principle. In fact, I was driving down Porter Road coming back from basketball practice the other night, and there was a deer that I think had been struck and was in the road, and I angled the car in a way to kind of protect it and called 911. Then the deer got up and was able to limp and then run into the woods. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not a hunter, but I completely respect anybody who wants to go out there and hunt. All right, coming up, Doug Birdsong joins our show next on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com, proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Welcome back to today's show, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Stock up for the weekend now at Brewers Outlet. Soft drinks, water, snacks. They roast the peanuts fresh and hot every day. Pickle bar is second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Stock up now. Stock up for the holidays. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And while I will be at Penn State and Michigan State tomorrow, 2 o'clock airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. There'll be Bucknell Penn State basketball on Eagle 107 and the outstanding play-by-play voice of Bucknell basketball and, of course, football. Bucknell Sports, period. Doug Birdsong joins us. Doug, great to have you back.
Oh, well, it's always a pleasure to be able to speak with you, Steve, because you are actually the best play-by-play announcer.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
Doug, they're off to a good start. Tell the fans a bit about Chris Haas that I think some fans had a chance to see a little bit of last year. Didn't have his best game against Penn State, but he has a target on his chest every game. How good is he?
He is really good, and he has, I think, elevated his game from, say, his freshman year where he really didn't play a whole lot of minutes, Steve, to last year and even to this year. He has, I think, taken advantage of the length that he has, which I think helps him defensively, but also helps him to elevate, even though he's 6 feet 5 inches tall, to elevate and be able to get his shot off against, you know, maybe in some cases more athletic defenders, certainly that he'll see against Penn State on Saturday. So I think that in terms of just a pure shooter, number one, he is very good. And then I think he has really broadened the horizons of his game, particularly with his athleticism, because he's pretty athletic too, and defensively, where he can, you know, kind of get those long arms into the passing lanes and cause some disruptions.
He also, as I mentioned when I prefaced that, he has a target on his chest every game. How impressed are you by the fact that he handles all the defensive attention he gets?
Well, that's a great point. You know, I think that kind of comes from the fact that his dad coached him in high school.
Right.
And if you think he had a target on his back by some of the opposition, either in Michigan in high school or here when he's played for Bucknell, I can promise you he had a bigger target because his dad really right. expected a lot out of him, as most fathers who are coaches and coach their sons do. I think that he would have it no other way. He is such a competitor, and to be able to see that probably, in many instances, the best defender of the other team is going to try and tackle him one-on-one, I think that just kind of fires him up. You know, he has really done a good job working off screens to be able to get himself open. But to be quite honest, and I think he showed it against Penn State last year, you kind of alluded to this, Steve, that he was able to, even in tight spots, get his shot off, and in many cases it goes in.
Yeah. Nana Filan is a guy that I walked out of Soika last year and I said to myself, they found themselves a power guy that can do some things down there. How much has he improved, Doug?
In my opinion, as much as anybody on the team, Steve. I think that last year he was really just trying to come into his own playing Division I basketball. Certainly he faced some good competition down in Reading and with his AAU team, but I don't know that he was particularly ready for the banging and just the attention that he was going to garner as a first-year player at a Division I institution. I tell you, from everybody I spoke with, coaches, fellow teammates, et cetera, he has put in as many hours in the summer as maybe anybody on the team. And he, I know you won't be able to, unfortunately, be able to see the game on Saturday, but I think the Penn State fans will see that may have seen the game last year, how much of an improved player Nana is. He really seems to go to the glass with a purpose, whether it's offensively or defensively. And I just think he is, the sky's the limit on his talent.
Is the style of play that Nathan Davis has brought in, are the changes subtle, or is there something dramatic we'll see that's already his imprint?
I think dramatic, because under Coach Paulson and under Coach Flannery prior to him, Bucknell didn't really look to run much. But whether it's a product, and I don't think necessarily it is, but whether it's a product of the 30-second shot clock or really more like what Nathan Davis likes to do, that once they get secure the rebound, boom, they try and get it up one sideline or the other, and it's pretty much the patented fast break. Try and get it into the hands of either a good shooter on the wing or maybe in the corner, or try and dump it down low to Nana. I think that this will be a fairly different team that Coach Chambers will see here this Saturday than what Bucknell presented the last, gosh, number of years, either, you know, when Coach Chambers was here at Penn State or before that at Boston University.
Stephen Brown and Ryan Frazier, a couple guys that can distribute the ball. What kind of options does that give Bucknell on the floor?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Ryan Frazier, because I don't think he necessarily gets as many kudos as he should in terms of his distribution and what he can do with the ball. He's kind of primarily known as a defensive player, and he certainly is one of, if not our best defender. But I think that Ryan has a more complete game. He's actually scoring a little bit more this year and did it towards the end of last year as well. But Stephen Brown, both he and Ryan, they see the floor so well. Stephen is much quicker than Ryan. Ryan will see the floor primarily more in a half-court set, and Stephen can certainly do that. But Stephen is very adept, and I think this offensive style really suits his abilities at seeing the floor, 90 feet down the floor. So if they get a rebound, he gets it at the top of the key or somewhere in that neighborhood in the backcourt, he can throw a dart of a pass down floor to a leaking Haas or Zach Thomas or maybe even Nana if he's not the guy who got the rebound to begin with. But Stephen and Ryan, both very adept at passing.
Zach Thomas, you mentioned in that answer, Doug, he's coming off a double-double. He had 15 and 10 against Manhattan. Where is he better?
I think his strength, I was talking with him yesterday at practice and asked him, well, you look much bigger. And he goes, I gained 15 pounds of strength over the summer. And after last season ended, Jerry Schreck, who's our head strength and conditioning coach and works with the men's and women's basketball teams, he really put all the guys, but in particular Zach, through a regimen to try and gain strength and weight. And he feels it really helped him. He actually worked in the summer with summer league basketball down in the D.C. area. So he had a couple of the Maryland players, and of course they have a fantastic team this year, as well as Georgetown players on his team or on other teams in this summer league. And that, coupled with his off-season workouts, he thinks has made him a much better player as well.
You mentioned earlier in discussing Ryan Frazier and his distribution that he's an outstanding defensive player, and I think that's been his M.O. from the second I saw him as a freshman. Overall, defensively, they're coming off a game where they played Manhattan, and Manhattan only had 34% from the field in that game, and Bucknell won it. What has made Bucknell a better defensive team early in this season?
Well, I don't know if Coach Davis would agree with you in the very first few games in terms of being a better defensive team. I didn't get to call the Manhattan game. I was calling our football game at Colgate on Saturday, but from what I was able to gather from the players, from Coach Davis, Justin Antwill, who called the game for me, I think that they have really honed in on what Coach Davis wants in terms of defensive intensity. Certainly Coach Paulson expected defensive intensity, and certainly both Coach Paulson as well as Coach Davis expected in the man-to-man, but Coach Davis also uses a matchup, and I think that it's been a little bit of a transition for the guys to get used to that. Plus, they also do a different way. They kind of funnel everybody to the middle of the floor with Coach Paulson. They did that with Coach Paulson. Now they kind of go baseline with Coach Davis. So it, a little vernacular issue there, as well as just kind of getting a little bit more used to a new system. I think they are starting to get it, and I think some of those fruits of that hard work and stuff showed in that win against Manhattan, where, as you said, they really did a great job clamping down on nearly every one of the Manhattan players. Richards, of course, had a big game, but he's going to have big games here in, game in, game out this year for the Jaspers.
It takes a while to really get a matchup down. It really has to become instinctive to you. So there's a process to it, and he probably has talked about that process with you.
Exactly. You know, you hit the nail on the head there, Steve, because, and I don't know, it's sometimes not necessarily what you do, but what comfort level you have with your teammates around you.
Right.
Because you may do your part, but you have to have a comfort level that your teammate is going to do his part as well, because if he doesn't, then it can break down. It's kind of like being on the offensive line in football. You know, as a center, you've got a lot of things you have to do, but you want to make sure you do your part, but you have to feel comfortable with the two guards on either side or the tackles outside that are going to do their part, because if one thing breaks down there, then your quarterback's going to get sacked, or in this case, in basketball terminology, if you do your part, but you don't have comfort level in your teammate doing his part, then something's probably going to break down. It's going to be an easy shot for the opposition.
What are the early returns on the veteran Don Hoffman and Nate Jones moving forward?
You know, Don Hoffman, I'm so happy for him. He kind of last year struggled some, and it could be a variety of reasons. But this year, he seemed to draw new life in Coach Davis and his staff. And, man, he has been playing just out of his mind the last few games. He has really added a lot more depth to his jump shot. He always was a good jump shooter, say, up to 16, maybe even 17 feet. Mm-hmm. Now he can consistently hit a three-pointer. Loves the corner three-pointer, but won't be afraid to take a top of the key or a wing three-pointer as well. I'm just so happy because he's a senior. The two freshmen, Nate Jones and also Kimball McKenzie, the backup point guard, Nate Jones has a sweet stroke. His dad, of course, is the head coach at Radford,
right.
So he gets a lot of his stuff, in the right way because he, he came from it from a coach's background. And then Kimball McKenzie was the Baltimore Catholic League Player of the Year, so he faced great competition in high school and AAU ball. Neither one of those two, Jones or McKenzie, are fearful at all. They are terrifically talented, and it's great to have them at a school like Bucknell.
What does this 50-mile trip mean, and to have it consistently? I know the Patriot League means everything, but what does this 50-mile trip back and forth mean? Penn State went there last year. They come here this year.
You know, I tell you what. First off, I think there is so much respect for Coach Chambers. I know there was with Coach Paulson, and I'm sure there is here with Coach Davis as well. Number one, for Coach Chambers to take Penn State on the road at Duquesne, and I know it didn't turn out well as the Nittany Lion fans would have wanted, but to take them to Lewisburg and Bucknell, to take them to play Penn, say at the Palestra, and I understand there are pockets of Penn State fans all throughout the state, and that's a great way to get the team in front of them, but there are no other coaches that will do that. For him to do that just garners so much respect, I know, among the coaches, and I'm positive among the fans as well. I think, going to a great arena like the Bryce Jordan Center, playing a Big Ten team that I just know Coach Chambers is continuing to build this program, I just think the guys look up to and look forward to this game in so many ways. It kind of happens around Thanksgiving each year, so it's kind of Bucknell's way of giving thanks to be so close to the Penn State campus.
Well, Doug, I always look forward to seeing you. You always do a great job. You and your family, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, same to you, Steve. You're, number one, a great play-by-play announcer, but most importantly, a class guy.
Oh, Doug, thanks so much. Hey, have a great one. We'll see you soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Doug Birdsong, you'll hear him on Eagle 107 tomorrow with Penn State Bucknell basketball. And, of course, I'll be in East Lansing with Jack Ham, Joe Putnam, Roger Corey. Starting at 2 tomorrow for the Dietz and Watson tailgate show, Penn State and Michigan State. Greg Pickle still to come on the show today along with Rich Scarsella. And also join us in the final half hour, Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. News at the bottom of the hour were brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Our thanks to Doug Birdsong, who joined us in the opening half hour. Penn State Bucknell basketball tomorrow. Also, Penn State football tomorrow as the Nittany Lions take on Michigan State in East Lansing. Michigan State, Michigan, or Ohio State will end up being the Eastern Division champ with the right to face Iowa next Saturday for the Big Ten Championship. Iowa is just underway as we speak against Nebraska, as Iowa looks to stay within the ranks of the Final Four teams as an unbeaten at this point at 11-0. We're working on getting Gary Dolphin on the show next week, the play-by-play voice for Iowa football. And so there's a lot going on there. You'll hear Bucknell, Penn State basketball, and Eagle 107 tomorrow with Doug, Jack Ham, Joe Putnam, Roger Corey will be out at East Lansing for Penn State and Michigan State. Our Bozo of the Day is going to be the next hour. Believe it or not, Johnny Manziel was a finalist and didn't win. We had to go in a different direction. Time now for This Day in Sports History. Then Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. On This Day in Sports History, 1942, Ben Hogan, the great Ben Hogan, won his third straight Vardon Trophy. In 1960, the great Gordie Howe of the Detroit Red Wings scored his 1,000th career point. It was on this day in 1980, the first time it ever happened. It was a Thanksgiving Day game between the Bears and the Lions. The game went to overtime, and Dave Williams of the Bears became the first player in NFL history to return the opening kickoff of overtime for a touchdown and end it. Thanksgiving Day in 1980. And also in 1994, Joe Montana of the Kansas City Chiefs became the fifth quarterback in NFL history to pass for 40,000 yards. Eagles were awful again yesterday. They're a mess. They hit the soft underbelly of the schedule of Tampa Bay, Miami, and Detroit and lost all three. And the last two, Tampa Bay and yesterday with Detroit, were routs. Tony Romo is done for the season with the Dallas Cowboys. Finished. That's it. Out. And he is, the Cowboys season essentially is now over. They're no factor. All the stuff about running the table will not happen. In fact, the Redskins are right in the thick of this, and they play the Giants coming up on Sunday. That game will be on Fox at 1 o'clock. Green Bay lost last night. Minnesota back in charge in the NFC North. Jay Cutler played really well, and the Bears beat the Packers last night, 17-13 on a rainy night at Lambeau. And, of course, today, college football, you've got Iowa taking on Nebraska just underway. You need to stock up for the rest of the weekend. Brewers Outlet's the place to go to. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Called the beverage supermarket, by the way, for a reason. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, without a doubt. Water, soda, snacks, roasted peanuts, fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register, very easy. And the pickle bar, whoa, second to none. Love the barrel pickles, love the dill pickles. Big fan. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State plays Michigan State tomorrow, 3:30 the kick, 2 o'clock the airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And with that, we bring in Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. Greg, welcome. It is great to have you back.
Hey, Steve, always a pleasure. How are you guys doing?
Well, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, by the way.
You as well, Steve.
Okay, so your view on what you saw Saturday and also some big picture stuff on where Penn State is.
Yeah, I guess we'll start with Michigan. So, I mean, that's a game, obviously, where Jim Harbaugh and his staff found a way to sort of game plan Penn State into a lot of bad matchups. You look at what they did at the line of scrimmage. You look at what they did with Chris Godwin, with Jordan Lewis. Obviously, the kick game was something that didn't really work in Penn State's favor. On Saturday, the offense had a hard time getting going, and the defense, you know, Jake Rudock had a lot of time to throw the football in a lot of different situations, and that hurt Penn State. You know, James Franklin talks a lot about matchups and about how important they are in games, and I think sometimes that gets overlooked when the focus is turned to coaching or depth and all these other different things, injuries, and really it was just a matchup issue, I felt, for Penn State against Michigan. They did a lot of things well, but Penn State doesn't do so well, and that it ended up being a game where Penn State did have some opportunities to make plays to win. They didn't make them, and Michigan did just like it has all year. So I really thought that was a takeaway from that game. You know, it's a game that maybe somewhere down the road Penn State could find itself winning, but this year wasn't it. And then big picture, you know, coming out of that game, you know, it was good for recruiting in terms of looking to the future and things to build on. Obviously, the noon start didn't really help that, but it didn't hurt it as much as I quite honestly thought it would. I thought it was a pretty good turnout to get a commitment. So that was a positive. And then other things to build on, you know, it's just continued experience in games like this and big games that are nationally televised and against good opponents and good coaches. And, you know, you need those type of games, even if you don't win them going forward, to learn how to win them. And I think Penn State will be able to take some positives out of that as well.
What about the fact that at this stage, Penn State's margin of error, how much do you think that affects how they feel they have to call the game at times? I think it affects the psyche of the football team, almost feeling like they don't have to play perfect, but almost.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the line between having to play perfect and having to play almost is really small. I mean, Penn State at this point of the season, James Franklin mentioned they're really banged up this week. That's not something new. That's been an issue all year for the most part. So you have that going on. You obviously have situations where you have young players on the field that aren't necessarily experienced with playing teams like Michigan that are well coached and very old in terms of how long those guys have been in the program and in the system. So it's hard. It's hard when you know each mistake could be the one that ultimately sinks the team. And a lot of guys, you know, are maybe sort of skating on ice or, you know, thin ice, if you will, in terms of trying to overthink. You know, we hear so much about having to think less and play faster. Well, Penn State seems to have a lot of guys that are thinking a lot right now and making sure that everything they do is right. And then they're a step behind. And that leads to some of the tackling issues, as James Franklin explained on Tuesday, with sort of leverage and that type of deal. Guys getting out of position and then their teammates can't help them because of it. And a lot of it, you're right, Steve, it comes down to thinking so much about what they're doing that they're not playing at a high enough level. After, you know, they're a step behind because they're thinking, and it goes back in a lot of ways to youth, and it goes back to that margin of error. I think this team, you know, to beat a team like Michigan, to beat a team like Michigan State, Ohio State, they can't do a lot wrong. You know, you look back to the Ohio State game, you have the holding that wiped out a touchdown, you had a drop pass down the sideline that would have set Penn State up with good field position. You had some other errors in that game, and the Michigan game was the same way. You can point to just a few plays to turn a game, and for a lot of teams, that's a lot of pressure to play under, and Penn State's no different.
All right. You mentioned the recruiting part. A lot of people show up. I think some people were surprised they didn't see more verbal commitments. What kind of setup weekend, though, was this, in your opinion, for Penn State future-wise as a setup to get some of those verbals down the road?
Yeah, I'll just start with the first part of that, Steve. I think every weekend like this, it's really hyped up, and it's really good for the program, and there's a lot of expectation that, you know, X amount of verbal commitments are going to occur. And that's just not always the case. Some kids are in town. You know, the biggest part about this weekend was the 2017 group. They got one pledge there, but a lot of those kids aren't ready to decide more than a year before they can even sign on a dotted line. So
right.
As a setup weekend, it was really good. You know, they got kids in. The noon start wasn't great for travel, but it was good because they got to keep kids afterwards and show them around and take them through the facilities and campus if they wish. And I'm sure there were some academic people available for them to speak to if they desired as well. So for a setup weekend, it was really good. When you hear down the road kids commit to this program, that you're almost a guarantee that if they were at this game, it'll come up as a reason why, whether it was atmosphere related, whether it was something they learned about the coaching staff or the players that did all during their visit. This game will definitely come up down the road in future commitments, even though they only landed one on Saturday.
Michigan State coming up on Saturday. I don't know how much you had a chance to watch the Ohio State Michigan State game, because you're obviously working, you're trying to crank out stories, do interviews, things like that. If you did see some of it, what were your thoughts on what you did see?
Yeah, I saw about most of the fourth quarter, a little bit before that. You know, I know Ohio State did some things game plan and play calling wise that's been talked about a lot this week, but I was impressed by Michigan State's defense. I really was. And the fact that they held the ball, they had the ball a lot in that game, and that's a testament to both their defense getting off the field in a hurry and their offense, you know, really sort of taking the air out of the ball and grinding out a victory. And I thought that that was impressive. You know, it was sort of a Mark D'Antonio win, if you would. It wasn't necessarily flashy. You know, there wasn't maybe a play or three that you would pick out and really remember from that game. But it was a really good win, I thought. And to do it on the road is even more impressive. I thought their lines played really well. I think, you know, they have two guys on each side of the line at least that are pretty good in terms of what, you know, what teams have to game plan against. And it's just a solid football team. You know, obviously without Connor Cook, they did what they had to do on the ground to win. And a lot of that goes back to an offensive line that's very, very experienced. And yet again, you know, we get into the comparison and sort of that thing with Penn State. And, you know, this is another team like Michigan that has a lot of older players, a lot of guys that are experienced in big games. And it showed when they played Ohio State. And, you know, that's something that Penn State's going to have to contend with on Saturday at Spartan Stadium as well.
Well, this is also an interesting weekend because there are going to be a lot of coaches wondering what the heck's going on by the end of the weekend. You have Les Miles at LSU. There's a lot of talk that Kirby Smart's going to take the South Carolina job. Clay Helton doesn't know what's going on. A lot of people think Jimbo Fisher would be the guy I think they want to get at LSU. Tom Herman at Houston's name is going to come up left and right. Nobody has any idea if Bill Snyder's retiring. Frank Beamer is. How crazy is this time of the year?
Oh, it's nuts. And it's. I think, you know, I believe it was Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports that compared it to a crazy couple months, five-hour energy on steroids is what he called it. And it's a pretty good comparison. I mean, I think that we're going to see a record number of, you know, movements in terms of coaching this year, not just head coaches, but assistant coaches. Everyone knows a guy. Everyone has a guy. And I think it's going to be quite amazing the impact that this offseason is going to have on recruiting. You have a bunch of kids that know assistant coaches that committed to school because of their potential future position coach that might move on and get a head coaching job or might go to be a coordinator somewhere because a buddy of theirs got a head coaching job. So it's going to be pretty crazy, Steve, and it's not just going to impact the outlook of, you know, obviously college football teams for next season and beyond. It's going to impact recruiting too, because you're going to have 4- and 5-star kids that are committed to programs for a while, maybe jump ship and go to a different school because their favorite coach left the school they're committed to, or they like the way a new coach, a different school has set up its coaching staff with coaches it knows. Maybe they pick off two coaches from, you know, if a recruit had 3 finalists and, you know, school A picks off 2 coaches from the schools that they were looking at, well, then maybe that kid decides to go there. So it's going to be a really interesting dynamic to see how all these voids get filled. You know, there's a bunch open right now, and more so I would imagine than most years in terms of how many jobs are already known to be open. And then you have a handful of jobs at least that you might come open. You know, you're talking about, you know, Rutgers could possibly come open. Syracuse is already open. You know, no one, like you said, no one knows what's going to happen at quite a few other schools. So, I mean, it's really going to be a unique couple of weeks here in the bowl run to see how things shake out, which schools wait until maybe they're trying to pick off a college football playoff coordinator or position coach that they're not going to get until after that run is over. You know, it's going to be really a whole way to signing day from a recruiting standpoint. I think it's going to be quite wacky. And then obviously the turnover in staffs across the country is going to be very notable as well.
Let's get to a part that you discussed in the middle of that answer, Greg, and that has to do with the young people that they made a commitment thinking this is the way it's going to be. You've dealt with this repeatedly. What have been some of the reactions over the years when there is a coaching staff change and how it affects them?
Yeah, there's two reactions a kid generally have. One is shock and an immediate desire to go to a different school. You know, they're upset and they feel like they, you know, they can't trust the current staff because one coach or two coaches left. So immediately they reopen everything, they decommit, and they decide to either visit somewhere else or immediately commit to a second or third option that they had previously considered. And the flip side of that, of course, is if the kid stands pat, he waits to see how things shake out. And we're seeing kids doing that now. You know, just a recent example, there's a quarterback that visited Penn State this past weekend, Brandon McIlwain from Council Rock, that's committed to South Carolina. Well, no one really knows how that staff is going to shake out down there. Obviously, Steve Spurrier's out, but how is the rest of the assistant coaching staff going to shake out? So he's keeping his options open. He's still committed. You know, obviously, if things stay pretty much the same with just a new head coach, we'll probably end up there. But he's sort of keeping – you got to keep your options open anymore, because it's hard to say for sure you want to go to a school where the offensive coordinator that's coming in might not run an offense similar to your skill set. So some kids wait it out, some kids immediately decommit, but it's always a hectic time for players and parents and coaches, because until the wheel stops spinning, I mean, there's any number of things. We've seen coaches, of course, Steve, that have taken jobs only to turn around and take another job a couple of days later. So until the wheel really stops spinning, it's hard for these kids in a lot of cases to truly lock in their decision. Now, you have some kids that are dead set on going to a school no matter what the outcome is, what the situation is, who the coaching staff is. But there's not a whole lot of those in this day and age. A lot of kids want to play, for a position coach or for a head coach or a coordinator that they've known and trusted for years. And that's why you'll see so many kids bouncing around December, January, and February.
Basketball, about 10 days ago, went through its early signing period. It's a little bit, 2 weeks ago, went through the early signing period. There's been some that have talked about an early signing period for college football. Is what we've just discussed an argument against an early signing period?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think that there's two sides to that coin as well. The first one would be, you know, obviously if kids are going to make that decision to early sign, they better be sure of two things. Number one, their coach isn't going anywhere. And number two, that they really want to go to that school no matter who's going to be the coach there. So I think you'll see, you know, if they ever institute an early signing period, I believe you'll see a lot of kids not use it just for that, you know, very reason, that they don't want to get themselves in a situation. Of course, there's always been talk, as long as there's been talk of an early signing period, there's been talk of having an opt-out clause if a coach leaves. So if you have that in play, then maybe you'll see more kids use it. But it's definitely an argument against it, Steve. I mean, all of these kids are sort of waiting to see how things shake out. They don't necessarily know how things are going to shake out with coaches. Obviously, everyone has a little bit of a selfish streak, whether it's players or coaches or what have you, to get themselves in the best situation for future success. So, yeah, I think basketball seems to be a little bit more cut and dry with the way things work. I think it'd be more difficult for football, not just because of the increased number of kids that have to sign each year, but also that it seems to me there's an increased amount of movement between coaches each year. And I think that those two things would probably make a lot of kids reconsider, you know, the decision they're going to make to early sign if there ever was a period like that in football.
Greg, it's always a pleasure. I enjoy your comments very, very much, and your columns as well. And I hope you and yours have a great Thanksgiving weekend. We'll see you soon.
All right. Hey, you too, Steve. Thanks a lot. See you in Lansing.
Greg Pickle, PennLive.com, and also the Patriot News. Always great to have him on with us. Rich Scarcella in the next half hour. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, final half hour. Plenty going on today on the show on this Thanksgiving weekend, Black Friday. We a lot of stores, you know, not a lot. There were some retailers obviously opened yesterday. Black Friday today, the deals, of course, off the charts. Tomorrow, by the way, is going to be, I think they're calling it, what, Small Business Saturday? Is that what they're calling it, Small Business Saturday? And then, of course, we have Cyber Monday. Small Business Saturday means something to me. My late parents, and you know, obviously it was my father's vision because it was his business. Now, he was not in retail. He was in manufacturing. My father had his own sheet metal fabrication shop. And my mother is the one that did all the bookkeeping. And it was the pure definition of a small business. And my brother now owns the business today. At the peak of the business, my father was employing, I think, like 14 or 15 different people. Now, obviously, the business benefited our family tremendously, without question. But that small business also employed 14 or 15 people at its peak. And my father had great workers, people that did great work, real professionals. And I can't tell you how much I appreciated being around them. And I worked with them. I mean, I worked with them. I used to work the evening shift when I was in high school. I used to work every single break when I was in college. I would always work there, and we were on a trimester system. So, you know, I'd come back, work 10 days, go back to school. Spring break, work 10 days, go back to school, work the summer. And so I had great appreciation for them as workers and professionals. But the small business not only benefited my family tremendously, obviously, but it benefited all of those families because all of them had health insurance through the company. All of them were able to pay their mortgages because they were employed by the company and buy items, obviously, during the course of the holidays. So Small Business Saturday is coming up, and the Valley has small businesses up and down the Valley. And so many of them, of course, are with us. For example, Purdy Insurance is with us on Monday. Brewers Outlet today. Okay, Sunbury Motors and Sunbury Motors Kia, you know, with us every day. And so when I talk about supporting small business, hopefully you get out and you support a small business. You know, think of all the sponsors that you hear in this show. They're all small businesses. Every one of them would be the definition of a small business. And they are so important to driving the economy, and hopefully you'll get out not just tomorrow, but a lot over the next few weeks and support the great small businesses in our area. The great ones. We've got so many. Small business is big business in my mind. All right, top of the hour. Time now for a news update that will come back in the next half hour with Rich Scarcella as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.